Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films from all genres and bring you celebrity interviews every single week.
Very good, Lewis. Short but pointless.
Pizza Dude's got 30 seconds.
You want me to yank you out of that seat and shake it out of you?
I don't have it. Screws fall out all the time. The world's an imperfect place.
And now, here is your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD. Welcome back to the Back in Time podcast. I am your host, Kyle Autry, joined, as always, by my co-host, JD. JD, how are you tonight?
Dude, I am fantastic. I am living and dying and breathing and ready for a good night's sleep. Maybe I'm a little manic, maybe it's Hypnosil. I can't tell at this point.
Who knows, man? I don't even know if you're even awake right now.
Dude,
that's the crazy thing. Mind blown. Well, anyway, you guys are listening to the Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors episode. We want to thank you guys, as always, for hitting that download button on the podcast. You can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, and YouTube. And then also throw us a follow over at Back in Time Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And let us know what you want us to cover next. Even though we've got a pretty busy schedule, we're pretty much set until November. But if you have any ideas for the holiday season, Christmas time, let us know what you want to hear us cover before we close out 2019. I can't believe I'm actually saying that, JD. We're 3/4 of the way done with the year. Pretty nuts, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't believe how quickly this year is gone. It's just been a blur. Like Wile E. Coyote and freaking Meet Meep.
Hey, speaking of blur, we recorded the intro for this episode a couple days ago. An old noodle brain over here deleted the file. So we're going to have a short intro this week. And we're pretty much just going to kind of dive into things. Before we do, though, I did want to plug one thing because I'm going to put this up on the Twitter tomorrow. And I'm going to put a link to episode 1 and 2. That we did a while back with the Black Cat Shadow. We did Nightmare on Elm Street 1 on our show, and then episode 2 we did over on there. So I'm going to put the links in our Twitter. So if you just go to the feed, should be pinned to the top. So take a look at those archival episodes, and shout out to those guys. Bummer that we couldn't get them on. Just kind of crunch for time. Dave actually texted me and was like, dude, you guys are doing number 3. What happened to the crossover? It is what it is. You know, we wanted to get those guys on. It just didn't work out schedule-wise. We had to kind of cram it in here. But yeah, man, I am excited to get in the Dream Warriors. JD, are you ready, man?
Oh, heck yes. I am so ready for some Larry Fishburne.
Let's do it. So we begin with a quote that pops up on the screen. It says, "Sleep, those little slices of death. How I loathe them." Edgar Allan Poe. JD, you're a fan of his work, are you not?
I am. I literally have a book of his from 1904 sitting on my shelf. It's kind of like a little collector's ditty.
Yeah. Did you have a tattoo? Is that a quote from him too, or is it something else?
No, I do not have any Poe tattoos.
Okay. I thought you might have. All right. Well, one thing I noticed right away, and you just referred to it here, veteran actor Lawrence Fishburne is credited here as Larry Fishburne. JD, I was going to ask if you caught that, but obviously you did. What do you think about this strange opening, though? I kind of like it. It reminded me a little bit of either Child's Play 2 or 3 at the Doll Factory, where it's kind of like piecing together, but this one was like blue sticks and newspapers. Kind of like a classic 80s horror intro.
It really is, and if I'm not mistaken, is this the first time, or at least maybe the only time, that a Nightmare on Elm Street movie opens without a nightmare sequence?
I think it is. I mean, well, it gets pretty much into a sequence really quick, but yeah, it didn't open with one, which I believe did not happen in 1 or 2. Go back into the archives. We could be wrong.
We get down and dirty with Nightmare on Elm Street. Now we just get some papier-mâché straw popsicle stick houses.
We do get some Patricia Arquette here. I'm a huge fan of hers. Been following her for years. Boyhood, a movie that I really like. She was a star of. Doing a lot of great things now, but I believe this is actually her first role, and she looked like she's like 15 here. I mean, she's super young, but pretty much all the Arquettes have grown up in the business, so it's not that surprising to see her starting off. So her character name is Kristen. Her mom comes busting in the door and wants to know why she's still awake, and she tells her mom that she's still having those awful dreams. Her mom says that she doesn't want to keep him waiting. She's got a boyfriend downstairs, so Kristen lays down in the bed, starts to fall asleep, and we zoom in on the glue stick house, and she wakes up to the sound of little kids playing jump rope, and they're singing that familiar Freddy song. You guys know how it goes. And she sees a little girl up on the porch on a tricycle, and the door opens up, and she's like, "Little girl, don't go in there." But she just rides right on in. So Kristen chases after her, and eventually, when she goes in, we're inside the house. She makes her way down to the basement area, and she finds the girl on the tricycle, and the furnace starts up, and smoke shoots out, and the little girl goes, "Freddy's home." Kristen grabs her and takes off, but she runs into some trouble pretty quick here. She steps into some black tar, kind of sticking to her feet. Freddy comes running in, takes a swing at her, but she's able to get away. She runs up to the stairs, finds a bunch of hanging dead bodies, and then the little girl says, "Put me down, you're hurting me." And then when she looks down, she's just a bag of bone. And then she comes to JD. What do you think of this opening scene?
It's a pretty frightening opening scene, and there's a lot of creepiness that goes into it. Obviously, like when she's running with the child in her arms, I'm like, hey, this is not really carrying a child anymore. It looks like she's carrying a Cabbage Patch doll or something like that. And then for it to be just like the bag of bones, like you said, was just creepy as all get up.
Yeah. And then she sits up and she thinks the dream is over. She goes into the bathroom. The water faucet turns on. But all of a sudden, the faucet turns into like a hand and grabs her. And then we see Freddy in the mirror. And then her mom comes rushing in and calls her name. And then she turns around. We see that she's actually slit her wrist with a razor blade and just passes out onto the floor. JD, I thought the scene was over. I was not expecting this. Kind of scary for a lot of reasons here. What'd you think of this?
It's a good transition between dream and reality. And the more you can realize how dangerous Freddy is in dream world and how that impacts you in the real world and how the rest of the world perceives what you're going through is just kind of really, like, it's good. Like, that's good writing.
Yeah. Well, if we meet old Larry Fishburne next, I can't figure out why he changed his name. I mean, I honestly didn't recognize him at first here. He's like a young kid, really slim. I mean, I'm not calling him fat, but he's thicker than a Snicker now. He's playing Max, one of the nurses here. Let's actually listen to our first clip as Max has a theory on all the recent suicides as he's talking to Dr. Gordon.
Health officials are at a loss to explain this alarming trend.
I like a little cheery news to start the day, huh?
Yeah. Say, listen, Doc, I got a new theory about all these suicides, right?
Don't hold back on us, Max. We need all the help we can get.
Yeah, fucked up chromosomes, man. Think about it. All their parents dropped acid during the 60s.
Well, beat Sims' theory. She thinks it's nothing but sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Shit, that's what keeps people alive.
Hi, Terry. You don't look so hot, kid. Are you getting some sleep? I didn't think so.
Good morning, Dr. Gordon.
Good morning, Jennifer. How are the burns?
Regular menthol, ultralight.
They're heating up nicely.
Yeah, I've been good. So, when do I get my cigarette privileges back?
Don't hold your breath.
Hey, Dad.
JD, what'd you think of this scene?
I loved your description of good old Larry F. First of all,
Larry F.
Mr. F. He's a fantastic actor for sure. I recognized him as soon as he comes carting down the hallway, and I was like, oh my gosh. And yeah. I kind of had forgot that he was in this movie. It's been a good while since I've seen this last. But it's a cool scene, and it sets the stage for a lot of the hypothetical and theoretical that we get to go through as they discuss the patients. Like, there's a really good framework to this story, which I think we get to see established early on.
Yeah. Now, Dr. Gordon and Dr. Sims are called in to try and sedate a new patient. And we see that it's Kristen who's been brought in. She kicks Gordon to the ground and then grabs a scalpel and starts singing the song. And that's when Nancy Thompson enters. JD, we haven't seen Nancy since part one in the archives. What do you think of seeing her here?
I like the little streak of gray hair that she's got going on.
She's aged a little bit.
A little bit. She has seen some shit.
Yeah, and I did like that touch because you know it's only been like 3 years. Like, she didn't have gray hair at this point in her life. No, not at all. But yeah, I mean, she's not in part two at all, correct? My memory's super foggy on that. Yeah, all new cast. So yeah, it's interesting that she makes her return here. I actually love that part of the writing. I bet they were kind of kicking themselves they didn't write something out for Johnny Depp to come back, huh?
Johnny Depp, more like it.
So Gordon and Nancy are talking outside, and he says that they did have a kid last month that cut off his eyelids to try and stay awake. And then before Nancy leaves, Gordon asked what the song was that she was singing. And she's like, oh, it's just something the kids say to keep the boogeyman away. JD, I love the song. I just think it adds a cool element, kind of like the Halloween jingle with John Carpenter. What about you?
It's really good for pacing and sort of setting up that precog of expectation. And it's just that you know what's coming after you hear it, but it still heightens your anxiety of watching.
So we're introduced to Philip next. He's played by Bradley Gregg, who we're going to talk a lot more about in a couple weeks when we get into Stand By Me, because he plays probably my favorite character name from Stand By Me. JD, I know you don't know this yet, but his name in that movie is Eyeball Chambers. Such a cool name. How do you get the nickname Eyeball?
Well, there was a time in high school where I threw a French fry at somebody.
Hit him in the eyeball?
I hit him right in the eyeball, right as he was blinking, and the French fry got stuck in his eye.
That's awesome. And you guys called him Eyeball from then on?
No, we called him Frank the Tank. He was a loser. I hated him. I one time poked him in the eyeball, too.
Gosh, what is with you and I?
Apparently, it's a thing.
I'm going to call you Eyeball DeSandro. How about that?
Call me Eye Gouge. I like Eye Gouge better.
Yeah, I bet you do. Well, Nancy is talking with Kristen's mom next. Let's take a listen to this clip.
Mrs. Parker, was Kristen acting any different? Did you notice anything strange before she made the attempt?
Kristen specializes in strangeness. I've spent thousands on psychiatrists.
Did she always have nightmares?
No, they've gotten worse since I took away her credit cards.
I'm serious.
Miss Thompson, I don't know what you want from me.
Just some answers. There are other kids involved, not just Kristen. All good kids, smart kids.
Look, I'm sorry to hear that, but you're the experts on this, not me. If I had any insight into any of this, I would share them with you. Believe me.
I'm sure you would.
You'll excuse me, I have to get downtown.
I'll need to get her things. I had them packed in a suitcase. Teresa! Teresa!
I'll get them, please. I don't mind.
It's the first door at the top of the stairs.
JD, what do you think about her, Kristen's mom here?
She's kind of like she's in her own world. She's got this dress, she's got her cigarette, she's got her fancy house.
Yeah, not a fan of Kristen's mom, but I was a fan, and I really like this writing part here, JD. Nancy goes upstairs, she finds the house, and we'll find out later on in the movie, that's actually Nancy's house from when she was a child. What did you think of that?
It's a really cool way to tie everything back together and to sort of bring some semblance of unity between the first movie, skipping over the second movie, and tying the third movie into this overall arc of what is Nightmare on Elm Street.
Now, later that day, we cut to Gordon, who's researching on his giant 1987 computer, and he's looking up the medication that Nancy is taking after he saw the prescription fall out of her pocket earlier when they were talking, and it's called Hypnosil. Am I saying that right, JD?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And I paused it on the label or the description on the computer. It says it's an experimental drug effective for management of psychotic disorders for sedation where dreamless sleep is considered optimal. Suppression of night terror. Is this a real thing? I know you actually suffer from night terrors. I don't want to make light of it if it's not.
I don't think hypnosil is a real thing. No, okay. I do not.
It'd be cool if it was, though, right?
Well, yeah, it would solve a lot of problems.
We talked a little bit about that on the previous episode that you deal with, like, awful night terror. Is that still going on with you?
It happens from time to time. It depends on, like, my mood and anxiety and, you know, things of that nature. But, no, I do suffer from night terrors. Probably a few times a year I get it really bad. But I also get, like, these really intense, like, out-of-body experiences where I get to be interacting directly with my dreams, much like in this film. And if you've never had one of those, then you're missing out, and I hate you. And if you have, let's talk.
Yeah. Now we cut to Kristen, who's laying in bed late at night, and we see she's drawing a picture of the house. She comes to with the sound of a creaking door, and the little girl's tricycle enters. The bike is smoking, the tires bloody, and she exits the door of her room. On the other side of the door, she's back inside the house again from earlier. She finds a burned pig on the table who, like, snarls at her. It's kind of creepy. Oh, but yeah. I love the detail in the effects of this scene with the rug that starts moving. It goes up the wall, and the drywall comes flying out, and the lights are flickering. And then she just shoots up into the air with this, like, giant black worm-looking arm that starts eating her feet first. And then we cut to Nancy, who hears the screaming going on down the hall. So she enters her dream state and gets into the house. And then she cuts the worm with a piece of broken glass. And she tells Kristen to wake up. And then she opens her eyes. She's back in the hospital room. And she's got the cut on her hand from the glass. JD, what do you think of this sequence?
It's really kind of, like, intense, like you're saying. Like, there's a lot going on here. There's a lot of haunted house-esque creepiness. Yeah, it definitely gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, and the special effects are just awesome here. Like, I really am super impressed with how well they've kind of held up. I mean, there's certain parts that are cheesy, but, I mean, this part I thought was super cool.
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic scene.
Now, Kristen and Nancy are talking in the next scene. Kristen wants to know if Freddy's real. Nancy says that he is, and also tells Kristen that the house she's dreaming about is her childhood home. So we get into a group session next, which they call Straight Talk. And a few of the hospital attendees are kind of sharing their stories. Philip says that they all dreamt of this guy before. And then Dr. Sims speaks up and says the dreams are a byproduct of guilt. Nancy doesn't agree with her. And then later that day, a couple of the kids are playing Wizard Master. I don't know. I don't remember ever playing that game, JD. We might be too young for that. Do you remember any Wizard Master playing?
No, but I feel like it was like a cheap knockoff of Dungeons and Dragons or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was at first, to be honest. And then old Max comes in to ruin the party. Thanks, Larry. He's telling everybody lights out. So we cut to Nancy and Dr. Gordon, and he's taking her out for a drink at the local pub, and he's asking questions about her childhood, and she explains that her mother died in her sleep. And she says, what if I told you that your patients are in real physical danger from their dream? She wants Gordon to prescribe them the drug that she's taking, and he says that he won't do it, and she shouldn't be taking it either. We cut back to the facility and zoom in on Philip sleeping, and he's got, like, these puppeteers on the wall. So one of them actually morphs into Freddy, which I thought was amazing. It's like a little claymation. And then Freddy tells Philip to be quiet and starts to just scrape him with his knife. And his roommate Kincaid tells him to wake up as he sees him kind of sleepwalking. And when he doesn't listen, he's like, have a nice stroll, asshole. And we see Philip just walking throughout the hospital. He's, like, on the strings, like he's a puppeteer. And then that's when Joey rushes to get some help when he sees him going toward the top of the building. And of course, he doesn't talk. He's like a mute. He just runs around like beating on stuff and then wakes everybody up and they see Philip standing on the ledge of the building and Freddy is just up there like a puppeteer and he just cuts the string and Philip crashes to his death. What'd you think of this scene, JD?
I just find it interesting that this is probably one of the, maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he's being manipulated through the dream world, but he's not having a physical interaction in the real world.
Right.
Like, shouldn't blood be pouring from his wrists and from his legs? Because in all other instances, when you are manipulated through the dream world by Freddy, it physically manifests into you.
That was my understanding of it, but this happens more than once in this movie. So I don't know exactly what to say on that, other than maybe this director had a different vision would be all I could add to that. But yeah, I mean, as much as I just talked about how great the effects are, I didn't think it was all that great to see Freddy like he's 300 feet tall above the building with like strings hanging. Like, I was like, oh God, that has not aged well. So some stuff has held up, some stuff hasn't. Anyway, we get to the group meeting the next day. Everybody's obviously pretty upset. They're arguing. And the group of kids say that if it's him, he's trying to kill us and pit us against each other. Dr. Sim says that this is just sleepwalking. It's not the dreams. And Kincaid's like, how much longer are you going to keep blowing smoke up our ass? She tells him that he will spend the night in the quiet room as he fights off a couple of the nurses here. And then in the hallway, Gordon tells Dr. Sims that he's prescribing them the medicine, the Hypnosil. Hypnosil. That makes more sense. And yeah, he's going to take full blame for everything. So whatever happens, 100% on him. What do you think of Gordon changing his mind here? Because, I mean, just at the bar with Nancy, he was like, nope, you shouldn't be taking it. And they definitely won't be.
I think it's a very mature decision by him.
I mean, it's kind of like he's got to do something, right? Like he's got kids jumping from the buildings. Like, what does he have to lose at this point?
And it comes, I mean, the research is there. Obviously, things are working well for Nancy, and we don't necessarily know jumping into part three if you haven't seen part one and you're just like, who's this screwy broad? Mm-hmm. That's one thing, but it's like, obviously, she's battling some pretty massive demons.
Yeah. So we're going to cut to Taryn next, and she's kind of coming out of the bathroom area, and she gets approached by one of the male nurses, and he wants her to get high with him, but when she refuses, he's like super aggressive, and I couldn't help but notice how much the guy looked like Jose Canseco.
He did!
I had to check the IMDb credits. I was like, hey, was that Jose trying to break into the movie career? I thought it might be, but it definitely wasn't. Yeah. And anyway, so we cut to Jennifer, who's doing anything possible to stay awake, including burning a cigarette on her arm as she is just sitting there. And as she's sleeping, we see Freddy on the TV, and we're off to another dream sequence here. So she starts approaching the TV, and then these Terminator looking arms come out from the side, and Freddy says, now it's time for your big break, and slams her front, like head first, right into the TV. Smoke, fire, everything starts coming out, and then Max comes in seconds later to see that they've lost another one. What'd you think about the death scene for Jennifer?
Well, she definitely gets her big break. For sure. Welcome to primetime, bitch. And it's
aggressive.
Well, I believe the original line was welcome to primetime, bitch, and then it here's your big break, or however they cut it, and they made both into like one masturbation line. But it's really kind of creepy, and I think it's a little forced and a little too soon from the last death, and then we're jumping into this death. And when you look at how long Freddy really teases his enemies, you know, before just brutally murdering them, like this has just happened so fast. He's like, okay, bitch going to sleep, boom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's on the mark here. He can't wait for them to doze off. So we cut to the funeral next day, and Gordon is approached by
time out. But why is there only a funeral for her, but not for the other guy?
I did notice that. it's like they pick and choose the funerals here.
Or is it like just like one double? Is it like a Roman funeral where they're like, double them up?
I feel like they shot all the funeral scenes in one day, too. Because I think Gordon's wearing the same outfit, except later on he has a sling on. They're like, they're standing in the same exact place. Anyway, so Gordon's approached by this nun, and she's talking about, well, you got to save the soul. And then Nancy approaches. She's like, who are you talking to? And then when he turns around, the nun is gone. I like this storyline, and I like the payoff later on that we'll get to, and I'll leave it at that. But, I mean, JD, did you like the nun storyline?
That's nun yell business.
Oh, burn. I like it, eyeballs. I mean, eye gout.
Thank you.
Okay. JD, there appears to be a love interest already between Gordon and Nancy, and this feels like the great outdoors all over again. Like, I don't get it. Like, when did this happen that they're having a candlelight dinner with, like, wine in front of a fireplace? It really caught me off guard. I was like, what the hell?
Well, I think that part of the problem is watching this movie as a youngster and then in my teens and then as an adult. Apparently, that's just what adults do.
Yeah, we never do that, though.
But I feel like maybe Tinder has ruined the randomly grabbing wine in front of a fire.
Right.
Majesty. I don't know. I just don't. I feel like Netflix and chill is taken over from wine and fire.
Nancy does a little bit of consoling here to Gordon. She's like, you're doing the best you can, but you know, I think maybe now you're ready for the truth, but you got to be able to put everything aside that you know. So we cut to the next day. Let's listen to Nancy explain what she knows and who's trying to kill them.
Not in the mood.
He wears a dirty brown hat. He's horribly burned. He has razors on his right hand. Who is he? His name is Freddy Krueger. He was a child murderer before he died. And after he died, well, he became something worse. 6 years ago, he killed my friends. He almost killed me.
Why is he after us?
Yeah, and what did we do? It's not you. Your parents, my parents, they burned him alive. And now we're paying for their sins. You are the last of the Elm Street children.
Mom and Dad, I mean, that's crazy. They never mentioned anything.
Oh, sure, that's the sort of thing parents tell their kids. Good night, darling. Say your prayers. And oh, by the way, your father and I torched some maniac last night.
So what we do about this creep?
Kristen is the key. She has a very special talent, a gift.
I haven't been able to do that since I was a little girl.
You did it the other night. That was different. You never lose a gift like that. You just forget how to use it.
JD, what do you think of this scene?
Really neat the way that they sort of describe the origin of what Freddy represents and what the trauma that the parents sort of pushed out into the world by doing what they did to Freddy. And it sort of takes the mythology of the Nightmare on Elm Street and brings it to the forefront in a very unique way, which I know that the subsequent sequels really take advantage of.
Now, Gordon turns off the lights. And he's going to try and get the group to go into a hypnosis here. So we watch the pendulum swing, and then they watch as Doc Gordon just counts them down, like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And they nod off to sleep, and moments later, they wake back up. At least they think. Joey follows one of the nurses into the hallway room, and she like shuts the door behind her, and she says she's been wanting to get to know him and get him alone for a second now. So she shuts the door behind him, locks it. We'll come back to that. We cut back to the group, and they're still dreaming. Will stands up and walks, and he says, wow, in my dreams, I can walk, and I'm a wizard. Like, God damn it, Will. We cut back to Joey. The nurse is now stripped down to pretty much nothing. She gets on top of him and they start to kiss. But that's when this like weird snake-like tongue comes out from her mouth and literally ties him to the bed. And we hear a familiar laugh, and then we see Freddy, and he says, "What's wrong, Joey? Feeling tongue-tied?" And then the floor just drops out from underneath the bed, and we see like fire. It's kind of like a pit. And then we cut back to Kristen, and she says, "Freddy's close." Gordon tries to open the door, but the knob is burning hot. And then the walls start to shake, and the room is catching on fire, and they're trapped. And the doors open. It's Dr. Sims. And everyone's all right. They're just sitting on the floor, sleeping in the chairs. Everybody except for Joey, who's now in a coma. JD, a lot to unpack here. What do you think of this dream sequence?
No big deal. Joey's in a coma. Everybody else is sleeping it off.
Like, everybody good? Yeah. Joey? Yeah, he's in a coma. All right. We're all right, though. We're okay.
We've all had that friend after one night of rough drinking. Everybody wakes up in the morning. And you're like, "Oh, are you good, man?" And yeah, I got my clothes, I got my wallet, I got my phone. What about you, man? No, Joey's in a coma, but you know, whatever. I told him not to do all that tequila.
Gordon and Nancy are relieved of their duties. Gordon tries to get some help from Dr. Sims, but she says, "This is all your fault. There's nothing I can do at this point." So we cut to the parking lot where he's taken out a box of his belongings, and that's where he spots the nun up in the clock tower. So he goes up to try and find her. And he finds her lighting a candle. She says this place used to be a purgatory. Twisted souls and the criminally insane. She says a young woman or a young girl was locked in here and raped over 100 times. The child was Amanda Krueger. And she had a son named Freddy, a bastard son. She tells him that he must find the boy's remains and you must bury him in a hallowed ground. Katie, what'd you think of this?
It's a little, not far-fetched necessarily, but
yeah.
I think like they need to do something to sort of expound on the mythology a little bit to create a wider world for the capabilities that Freddy has. And this definitely tells the tune of why he's capable of doing what he's doing. But at the same time, you know, it's a look for show, you know, show and tell kind of a thing. We don't see any of it. We're just being told all of this. And then it's like, "Oh, go get the bone." Like, okay. I mean, how many times have you walked up to a homeless person on the street and they're like, "Oh, go find the bones, the bastard son, and bury them." It's like, what?
So we cut back to the facility where Kristen is putting up a fight and Dr. Sims orders her to the quiet room and to be sedated. She leaves just kicking and screaming. We cut to the bar where Nancy is meeting up with her dad, Mr. Thompson. Now, JD, refresh my memory. Is he in the first movie? Is this the same actor?
Oh, yeah.
Because I could, for whatever reason, I couldn't find him on IMDb.
I'm fairly certain it's him. I mean, he's at least a ghost of himself.
Yeah. So he tells her that Freddy Krueger is dead, and he's really just not having any of this talk. Gordon tries to interfere, but he's like, "Who the hell are you? Get out of here." He's not going to help, so they leave the bar, and Gordon gets a beep right before they go out the door, and it's the hospital, so he calls from a payphone, and then it's Taryn waiting by the phone. She tells him that they put Kristen in the quiet room and sedated her. Nancy's like, "Okay, I got to find a way to get Kristen," so she leaves, and then Gordon rushes back over to her father, flips the table, and tells him that they're going on a scavenger hunt. I didn't expect this from Gordon. I didn't think he had it in him. What'd you think?
Well, I mean, Gordon, I think all people named Gordon sort of have this little ice edge in them. I'm thinking Gordon Bombay in particular.
Yeah, like the use of the word ice in there, too.
Thank you. I was hoping you noticed.
Flying V, man. Ducks fly together. Well, we cut to Kristen, who's fighting the sleep in a quiet room, and then we cut back to Gordon, who's gone inside the church, where he fills up an empty alcohol bottle with some holy water. And then Nancy enters the hospital and she's stopped by Mac. And he's like, "Hey, I can't let you through. It's doctor's orders." And he's like, "Even if it wasn't an order for Sims, there ain't no way I'm going to let you in here because kids have been dying left and right." Nancy convinces him to let her say goodbye to everybody, which he's like, oh, all right. Just immediately loosens up after he's super strict. And then we cut to Penny Brothers Auto Salvage. Mr. Thompson says, it's in there. I'm not sure if I can even find it anymore, but it's deep in the heart of this place. We cut back to Nancy, and she's having one more last group straight talk session. She tells them that they have to go in together. They've got to link up, and they have to try and save Kristen. They say that they're all in, and Kincaid, he's always got the one-liners in this movie. I love it. He's like, let's kick that motherfucker's ass all over Dreamland. So she starts the pendulum swinging, and they go right to sleep here before she even finishes the countdown. JD, I don't know. Maybe I've never tried to go into hypnosis, but can you really do that in like 3 seconds? That seems highly unlikely.
I think it takes maybe a little bit longer, but given that the kids are so sleep deprived, maybe there's an act of just contrition that makes them fall asleep much quicker. I don't know. I've never been hypnotized.
Well, we cut to Kristen's room and they're all in there together. The walls start to shred with Freddy's hands, and then Kristen yells something and then wakes up in her bedroom with the glue sticks and the house that she was building, and then her mom enters. It's kind of a replay of the first scene, except this time we hear the boyfriend yell something, and all of a sudden the boyfriend appears, but it's Freddy, and he rips the mom's head off. and then Kristen runs out and just topples down the stairs, and then she's all of a sudden back into Nancy's childhood home, the dirty, and then Kristen yells for Nancy, and then Taryn hears the scream, but then she's like in an alleyway. She's not even in the house. On the wall, it's actually written Taryn and Freddy with a heart around it, which I thought was kind of neat. So Freddy appears. He welcomes her home. And then they start to fight razor blades against razor blades. She cuts him, but then his fingers turn into syringes and he jabs them into her arms. And he's like, oh, what a rush. Super cheesy. Yeah, what do you think of this so far?
The way he's got these little penis syringe fingers is just so creepy.
Yeah.
Like he's Edward penis fingers going on here.
Got something going on. So Will is up next. Of course, in Dreamland, he can walk, so he's out of the wheelchair. And then Freddy appears and tells him that when he wakes up, it's back to the old saddle of death. And this like chair with razor blades and sharp objects on it comes flying down the hallway at him. He dives out of the way, and then all of a sudden he just kind of thinks in his mind he's a wizard, so he shoots up into the air and like fires this weird Ghostbuster looking laser at the chair and does the same thing to Freddy, and he's like, sorry kid, I don't believe in fairy tales.
Well,
some of the lines are so cheesy I just can't help but laugh at them. But yeah, that's it for Will, at least for now. And then we'll cut to Kristen, who's found Nancy, and then the wall starts shaking, and the wall busts open, and it's Kincaid. And she's like, oh, I'm so happy I could kiss you. And he's like, why wait? And he just walks over and kisses her on the cheek, and then he yells, Freddy, where you at, you pussy? And then a metal door opens, and the three walk through. Nancy says, this is it. Are you guys ready? And Kay's like, man, enough said. Let's get this. JD, what do you think of this? And Kincaid, man, I just like this guy.
We kind of have like really superheroes versus like monsters going on right now, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so cool about this movie. And that's why I love it so much, because it's this unique way of positioning. If Freddy has any power in the dreams, why do you not have any power in the dreams? And that's such a metaphor for life. And any time that you sort of are in a toxic situation where somebody has control over you and you feel like you don't have a voice in the situation, you have a voice. Kincaid has a voice, and he comes and he delivers that big spade shovel. Maybe not call it a spade shovel. And Kincaid delivers that big 1-2 punch.
Okay. Well, we cut to Mr. Thompson and Gordon. Thompson tells him it's over there, the caddy. So Gordon goes over to this red Cadillac and pries it open with a shovel. And then he turns to Thompson. He's like, you going somewhere? and then pulls out his car keys from his pocket. He's like, get over here. We got a funeral to attend. It's long overdue. We cut back to the downstairs and we got the furnace and we see Joey still hanging there with, I don't know what's holding him together. I think it's the tongue. And then he's over that fire where we last saw him. And then Freddy enters and Nancy yells to let him go. And he's like, all right, your wish is my command. So he starts releasing the tongues one by one. So Nancy rushes down and grabs hold of his hand before he falls in. And then they all start to attack Freddy. He immediately grabs Kincaid by the neck and just raises him up in the air like Michael Myers. And then Nancy jabs some like metal rebar right into his stomach. But Freddy just laughs and pulls it out. And she's, oh, he's never been this strong. And he tells them it's the souls from the children that give him strength. And he lifts up his shirt, like little faces on his stomach. Again, this part has not aged well either.
Oh, no.
But I thought it was, it's a cool idea. But yeah, very strange watching it. Meanwhile, Gordon and Thompson are digging the grave. They hear a sound. And Thompson's like, I thought we were the only ones here. He's like, we are. And then all of a sudden, these like wipers turn on and headlights and car horns. Thompson tells him, we need to bury this thing. And all of a sudden, Freddy's burnt bones stand up out of the bag. No. Old Skeletor. Yeah. And Thompson's like, I killed him once. I'll kill him again. And he goes after the skeleton who just throws him into a piece of scrap metal and kills him right away. And then Gordon gets thrown into the grave hole. And then Freddy just starts dumping dirt on the body. Let's take a pause for the cause. JD, what do you think of the skeleton?
Oh, the skeleton's fantastic, is it not? It's just so janky and claymation-y and just like, it's like a Stephen Schwartz just emerging from the darkness. And just like, oh, what's going on up here, guys? Like, I want to be a part of the party.
I feel like somewhere Tim Burton saw this in the theater and was like, I like that. I'm going to make something, I'll call it a Christmas, a jack-o'-lantern. And then that was his whole idea based off of this.
That was really your best Christopher Walken impression.
No, not Christopher Walken, Tim Burton.
No, I know. I'm saying it was an awful Tim Burton, but it was a decent Christopher Walken.
Oh, thank you.
That was a better Tim Burton.
I hate you. We cut back to the house. This time, each person is dragged through a different mirror one by one until Joey screams no, and somehow that brings everybody back through the mirrors. And Kincaid's like, you found your dream power. Nancy's like, it's over now. Her father appears and he says that he's crossed over and he apologizes for all the things that he's done. And she tells him that she loves him and they hug. And it's not old dad, it's Freddy again. And he sticks the blades right through her stomach. And then we cut to Gordon, who pulls himself out of this hole. He's woke himself up and he starts just pushing the bones back in the graveside. He's pouring holy water on Freddy and then says a prayer, drops the cross into the grave. And that's when we cut to Freddy, who's got these light beams coming out through his body and he disappears. Kristen rushes over to hold Nancy and begs her not to die. JD, what'd you think of the last scene in the house here?
Oh, it's a winner, is it not?
I mean, it's pretty good back and forth. I mean, I probably could have done without the whole storyline of the bones, but yeah, I mean, it's
bones,
pretty cool.
Bones, brittle bone, spooky little bones for sure. It just, but I mean, again, what we're talking, 1987?
Yeah, they're trying to be super creative for the time. You got to give them their due. So yeah, all the effects again look pretty cool. There's a couple things that are cheesy, but for the most part, still pretty impressed with everything. But unfortunately, for old Nancy, she is laid to rest at the cemetery next. And Gordon's standing there next to Kristen, and you know, they're giving the eulogy. And that's when he sees the nun walking past again. So he leaves and runs over. But all he finds is a gravestone. And we find out the nun, Freddy's mother. Interesting twist. So the movie ends with another scene in a bedroom. This time it's like a young man who's fallen asleep, and then we end with a shot of the house, the glue stick house, and then the credits roll. So, JD, what did you think about the ending of the movie here?
It had to be we have to have a cliffhanger. We do.
Right.
And I think this is a decent cliffhanger. I like the cliffhanger in the first movie much better, where you're sort of not necessarily certain about what you've seen and what's real and what's not. Obviously, the second movie plays on the same tropes, but I think this is a much more subtle way of going at it, because we think we've destroyed Freddy, but have we not?
Yeah, man, I thought the ending is interesting. You got to set up the sequel, because we know they're going to bleed this turn up dry as much as they can, because it's still breaking in the money at the movie theater. So 32 years old, man. How do you think this is held up?
Oh, I love it. I loved every minute of this. I think that, in my opinion, and, you know, again, we've only done part one and part two. This part three, we will do part 4, 5, 6, 7, and 69. We'll do them all. That's what she said. But this is my favorite so far. You know, everything from the music to the acting to the unique use of, you know, psychotropic drugs to bringing Nancy back and Freddy Krueger having penis syringe fingers and the whole phallic snake. Like, there's so much to be had. You can write an entire term paper about this film and everything that they try to accomplish. And I think it's fantastic. I love it.
Okay. Well, my opinion so far, I would put this as my number one as well. I think I'd go 3-1-2 out of the three so far. Yeah, I agree. I think this was more enjoyable. I thought it was more creative. I thought the effects were better. And just the overall storyline just seemed more realistic to me. So not that the first one didn't, but this just, I think, went places that the first one didn't. Overall, yeah, I really enjoyed it. Now, we're going to be back next week with an all-new episode. We're diving back into the Universal Monster franchise. This will actually be part 3 of Dave's Universal Podcast Extravaganza. I forget the actual name of it. It's something along those lines. And then we'll have a top 5 episode that's going to come out next week. And then we'll start off September with a bang. I talked about it a little bit earlier. First episode of September, Stand By Me, one of my all-time favorites. So can't wait to get into that. JD, you got anything else before we sign off here?
No, a big thank you all for joining us, for listening. If you've not listened to the first two episodes, go ahead and give it a listen of Nightmare on Elm Street. If this is your first foray into Freddy Krueger, by all means, tweet at us, send us some thoughts, some love, some hate, whatever you think about this little degenerate, burned-faced maniac we get to discuss.
Yep, let us know. And if you have any ideas for a top 5 episode, we're still trying to kick around that for next week. So if you think of something cool, tweet at us at Back in Time Pod, because we might just take you up on that. Now, before we go, just one last reminder. Find us on Apple Podcasts. Drop us a 5-star review on there if you haven't done that yet. That does help us continue to grow the podcast. You can follow us at Back in Time Pod. JD has a blog over at backintimepod.com. So check that out. And then you can follow me at KAutry29. JD is at UnjustJustin. But for now, we are out of time. Time to get back into the DeLorean. Punch in today's date. Hope that we don't fall asleep. And return back to present day. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week. See ya.
Welcome to Prime Time, bitch.